Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation. I'm your host, Todd Embley. And on today's show, I am proud to welcome Dr. Thuy Thuy Tan, founder of Bayo Global and a leading voice in international growth strategy. With over 16 years of experience helping brands like Spotify, Bumble, and Google expand into new markets, Dr. Tan shares how cultural insight, not just translation, can make or break global product launches. This conversation explores how Bayo Global helps companies develop culturally intelligent expansion strategies that go far deeper than localization. Dr. Tan explains the distinction between localization and culturalization and how a nuanced understanding of history, social behavior, and consumer psychology can set brands up for success. Tune in to hear her approach to assessing new markets, how global expansion into APAC differs from the West, and why many brands still get cultural strategy wrong. Then stay tuned for part two next week, where we dive into case studies with Spotify and Bumble and explore more common pitfalls in global expansion. Enjoy.
The first thing I always tell them is don't assume Asia or APEC is one market, right? As we talk about China is one, Japan is one, South Korea is one, and then you have Southeast Asia. Every single one is very different. And even within one country, like Malaysia, we have so many ethnicities in that country's ethnic groups, right? So every single one of us, you have India, Malay, and Chinese, especially the three main ethnic group, every single one has their own culture and language and, you know, value and so on. But they are one market. So I think, first of all, it's not to treat APEC as one uniform growth market, right? Instead, it's a complex set of market with different history and digital adoptions and curves and so on.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Negotiation, brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Thuy Thuy, welcome to The Negotiation Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Good to have you. Good to have you. Where are you in the world where we're recording you from today?
I'm in Bristol in the UK.
In Bristol. Where is Bristol in relationship to London?
London. That's a good one. So it's actually quite straightforward. It's London is on the east side, and if you go to the west for an hour and a half or 2 hours to the west, then that is Bristol. I think most people know about Bath Spa, so it's actually not far away from Bath Spa as well.
What is the approximate population of Bristol?
Ooh, you have me.
I do? Okay. Well, if anybody out there is listening, Google that for me.
I think it's for 400 something to 500 thousand.
Okay. That's people. Pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah. It's considered a big city in the UK. And yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. Could you share a bit more about your background and tell us what experiences led you to found Bayo Global back in 2017? And what was the gap that you saw that Bayo was created to fill?
Sure. I start off with as a customer experience consultant. So I help companies to understand and to figure out what is the best customer experience for their products or their services, so that the actually users have a better journey. And throughout the time that I started working with Marriott International Hotels Company, and this is 15 years ago or 16 years ago. So Marriott was one of the few companies at the time started to think about, oh, we need to understand people from different countries on how they book hotels or their needs when they kind of travel in different countries and what kind of requirements they need when they are in the hotels. And I was their external global consultant for quite a few years, traveling with them to different countries to talk to users, to talk to customers, potential customers, and that including Ritz-Carlton as well, because that is one of their branch. With high net worth individuals. So in that instance, but at the time, it's mostly with understanding different culture in terms of how they use their digital products, because I was working with their digital team. So on their websites, on their mobile apps, when people get into the hotels, should they build a mobile apps that actually going to fit into locals' expectations in terms of how they want to interact with the hotels and so on. And then I left the consultancy that I was working with and I started to work for myself under Bayo Global. I started to see actually there's even bigger gaps in terms of how people view cultural nuances when they actually build their business. Because if you want to be successful in a business, in a country, it's not just about a product. You have to make sure your marketing campaigns is actually localized as well. You need to make sure your pricing, your everything, propositions, your branding positioning and everything, it should fit into the local culture and local context. So I started to work with other companies, for example, Spotify, like you talk about, in kind of looking into a bigger picture of what the market is about, not just looking into what people say they do or what people behave, but also looking into the background of it, like the history of the countries, the political elements, the economy, the technology infrastructure, so that we can understand properly the whole ecosystem as a holistic view, to be able to say, okay, those are the things influence people's behaviors, mentality, attitudes towards certain things. And then what does that mean to your brand that if you want to survive in that market? So that's where I start to kind of work with clients and companies in different sizes to use cultural intelligence to navigate their businesses in different countries.
I wanted to ask you about Bayo Global, about the mission and how it helps brands expand internationally, the kinds of problems you're solving for clients when it comes to global growth. But I think you tapped into that a little bit when you answered the last question. But I will leave that question on the table, especially what is Bayo Global's mission in particular. But if you wanted to add anything to what you were just saying about the problems you're solving to help brands globally expand, I'll let you do that.
The mission is really to help brands to understand that it's not about localizing your business, but it's actually localizing the context. It's understanding what the customers and the markets is actually about, so that you actually can fit into them better. And also I wanted to business and also individuals within the business to kind of be open-minded and curious about it, rather than have a very set mind about this is how we do things and we're going to do the same thing in other countries. This work in this market, we are going to do the same thing for the other market. But also that is on the business side, but also on individual level, it's important for whether in a personal life or in a professional life for anyone to be open-minded about the world is actually filled of different culture or different values, that it's not like one culture doing the wrong thing and the other one doing the right thing, but it's actually everyone's doing the things that they're familiar with. So they're actually more acceptance about the world as it is as well. So that is kind of a side mission on top of trying to help businesses grow globally and be more connected into with the local market.
So when you're approaching, or when, I don't know, and you can tell me actually, whether you're approaching companies or companies are approaching you, and I think more often companies are coming to you saying, help me, when they need help with international expansion, what does your process look like? Like, could you walk us through a strategic approach or the first steps that you take to assess a new market opportunity for a brand?
So to answer your first questions and whether people come to me or I have to say, oh, do that, I think it's both. So throughout the 17 years I've been working on in this area, we actually went through a different phases of evolutions. I would call it evolutions of local adaptations. So in the very early 90s or 2000s, there are a lot of companies are still thinking, oh, one size fits all. So you need a bit more educational elements, not educational. You have to persuade them and let them understand why you need to do more than just using the same products in other countries. And then we moved on to another phase where people think about it as, oh, I'm localizing, means they are translating the language, but everything else keep the same. So it's kind of moving forward, but not enough. And to a certain extent, I still have to do that sometimes to kind of demystify that kind of thinking within organization, but less so. And then we kind of in the period of they understand, companies actually understood that they need to do a bit more. They probably translate, they probably have the currency change, payment method change. I would consider that as still very basic in terms of what we need to do. So sometimes when I go to company, especially startups, so I work with startup or scale ups, sometimes via PE, private equity or VCs, I still need to convince them that you have to start thinking about global, even you just started your journey in your domestic market, because you like it or not, you are still going to have global audiences use your product, even though you are in a market. And also it's so important to think about your products and services and business globally, even when you just started, so that you actually don't build something is so rigid that only fit into that market. And then when you are ready to adapt, it's too late, right? So it's too late. You have to change your propositions. You have to change your coding or backend or so on. So that might be too late. This is especially applicable for health tech related companies. For example, I was working with a startup that I started with from the UK, and we did research and things like that. And they knew they are going to expand because the investors actually are from other countries and they wanted to do it in their markets as well eventually. But so much so, the insights that they got from the UK is very, very NHS-led, right? Because this is a country with our national health services. So if they go into that, launch into their new products with that insights and with that thinking, then it will be too late in the future if they want to kind of, they have to reposition everything. So that kind of persuasions that I have to do sometimes is needed. But yeah, I have companies who come to me. Most of the time are bigger companies, because bigger companies now realize the importance of that, right? A lot of companies are doing all these local adaptations, doing a lot of understanding in terms of how they're going to operate. So for example, with IKEA, I didn't work on that project, but IKEA failed in a lot of countries when they launched, but they did one thing very, very right, because they learned from the mistakes. They went to India. Before they go to India, they spent years doing research. They have researchers visited 1,000 houses in India to understand, to see how people live, to know how people, the context of living, the needs and expectations and so on. And they launched it very successfully, not only doing it on the products they sell, but also on the operation side, partnerships, pricing, and even their cafe. They have vegetarians, meatballs that they are famous with and so on. And their cafeteria have 1,000 seats, because Indians, customer or consumers like actually spending time. I think it's similar to China as well, like spending time more casually and as a family. So they actually have 1,000 seats in the cafe as compared to we got it in other Western countries. So a lot of big companies are doing that a lot. That's why I actually have 7 years of collaborations with Spotify for a long time across 50 countries that I work with them, because they understood the needs of continuously and understand the market, not just to launch, not just to grow, but to innovate as well. So to answer you the other questions that you have very quickly as well, like you say, how do I kind of approach it, right? Like when they comes to me. So it's very depending on where they are in the process. So some companies, like I say, like big companies, they already understood the need. They already knew the need, but they might come in with a specific request. For example, we want to launch in this new market, like we didn't know already. It's like, for example, with Spotify, before they launch in sub-Saharan countries, we actually did a big piece. It's an understanding. It's a very big initiative, right? But to understand different levels of how they can be successful in that market. Or some company might come and say, we are launching in, we're already in this market, it's growing, but it's not growing very well. How do we grow further? How do we be more relevant? And so we will go back to where they are in the stage. If they are very early stage, like we don't know which market we want to focus on next of to grow or to launch, then I will actually have an exercise with them to kind of go through a process to choose that, to make sure that they are ready to go into a new market, not just that, but also to help them to choose which market is actually relevant to them.
If we're talking about localization, because we talked a little bit about that, but you use a different term. You talk about culturalization. What is the difference? Why does going deeper into culture and historical context matter for global success?
Yes. So when I started off talking to businesses about localizations, and I started to realize they actually have these misinterpretations of, oh yeah, we do a lot of localizations already, but it's not working and that and this and that. And I start to kind of dig deeper into what localizations do you actually have you done that you actually don't think is working. And so a lot of times it was just translations. It was just changing the currency or changing the price tag or the payment method. So it's very basic. So I realized there's these misperceptions about localizations equal to translations. So, but as we talk about, there's much more to that. So I start to use the word culturalizations. It's actually a term that used more loosely in games industry for quite a while, but it's not very popularized. But I use this because it's self-explanatory, even though it's not in Cambridge dictionary or any dictionary, but everyone knows what that means. And also it helps people to actually think deeper into what kind of adaptation they should do. Because culture is huge. Culture is not just about how the language is not just about social norm and so on, but it's actually, it's the air we breathe, right? Like it's everything we touch on. It's the clothes we wear. It's the building we build. It's the songs we listen to. It's the food we eat and everything else. So it's actually capture everything that encompasses our life or a society or so on. So I started to use that. And localization is very much one-off things. You change the language, you change the currency, you change the price, the payment method, and that is done. And often that is the case. But culturalization is more progressive. It's continuous effort. So it's not like you've done this and that is enough. You're done with that market. Because for first, culture is huge, like we talk about. So if there's it won't be possible to capture everything, know about everything about that market and the people in that market. And you can't possibly already done everything that is fit into whatever they want. And cultures sometimes evolve. Some evolve faster than the others and some don't. Like for example, a lot of beliefs and values don't tend to change as quickly, but technology might change and then change people's behavior. Infrastructure might change, then it changes people's behavior. So that kind of thing. You need to continue doing that. That's why I start to use the word culturalizations then. Localizations to change the mindset.
I know, I think I know what your answer to this would be, but I wanted to say, okay, I have a brand. I'm in a few different countries. Let's say I'm in Canada, Mexico, US, right? I've got North America. Now I'm looking to go to Europe. I might want to go to Germany or I want to go somewhere to Asia. And I come to you and I say, okay, listen, I want to expand into Asia. I want to expand. I want to start with China. Can you help us look like we're a Chinese company so that they'll accept us there? What do you say to that?
Well, I would say, like, step back, right? It's not that is the answer you're expecting me to you're expecting me to answer that. So yes, it's step back. It's like, but this is so common though. Like every time I talk to CPO or CEO or companies, they will always go straight to one specific questions, right? Like as if like they answer that question, they will be sorted. I was talking to a CPO and they were saying like, oh, I have this questions. I think is the most important question is how do we get our marketing person to know how to market in all these foreign countries? I was just like, but how about other things? How do you know this is the most burning questions that will solve everything? So with that, I'll actually step back to say, sure, you can. Well, first of all, is questioning, is China the right market to go, for you to go in? Because you have a big market population, you have a big populations and you have a lot of possibilities and opportunities. But how does that actually fit into your brand? Is there anything? So that is the exercise I actually mentioned earlier about finding whether the market is the right one. So if it is China, if it is Southeast Asia, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, and so on, like doing an exercise, for example, is more thinking about the opportunity and also the effort. For example, the effort is that do you have problems that you solved? The problem you're solving, is that manifested in the same way in the other countries that you're looking into? Or is the ecosystem compatible that you actually can straight away fit into the market very easily, or you actually need a bit more effort to fit that in? And even if you can fit it in, it's worthwhile to see how much effort is needed, what kind of help you might be needed, and so on. So it's kind of like, first of all, is asking that questions. And secondly is, sure, okay, we identify China is a right market to go into because there's an opportunity, a lot of opportunity to fit into that market. Then we will understand what do we know about the market already, right? So there's some assumptions that you can do some market analysis on that. Then look into the product fit as well. And there's another exercise I do with companies as well to understand, to for everyone's in the company to align with where you are going with that market, right? Because you want everyone to onboard with that approach where you are going to be able and happy to adapt to the China market. Because as we all know, it's quite a very different market than any other markets, right? So one of the exercises I did is kind of alignment, so, and also to understand what we know already and what we don't know about that market. So I call it four bucket exercise because basically it's quite straightforward. So the first bucket is facts, right? We know about that market. You have statistic figures and everything that to fit into that. And then the second one is strong hypothesis market. Strong hypothesis bucket. So in that bucket, it's about you actually know quite a bit and then quite sure about that information. And it could be kind of fact, but you need a bit more validations or invalidations of that piece of information to change that and move them into the fact bucket so you can make decisions. And then you have weak hypothesis bucket, which is the third bucket. So weak hypothesis is assumptions, personal subjective view, or our local team says this, but it might be true. It might be their own personal thoughts or opinion about that. Or we heard someone, or this is quite stereotyping, but might be right. So you can put in the third bucket. And then the fourth one is unknowns bucket. So it could be unknown unknowns or known unknowns. So something that we just simply don't know how Japanese view LGBTQ, or for example, or we just simply don't know what we don't, you know, like you can actually figure out the questions that you need to answer so that you can make a decision on that. So you have these four buckets. It's very important for everyone in the key stakeholders or experts in the area to kind of put together this exercise, but make sure that anything that you put in the facts bucket is actually backed up with credible sources. Because whatever decision you're going to make from that bucket, you're not going to test it anymore. You're not going to investigate anymore. If you get it wrong, then you'll make the wrong decisions and so on. When I was doing this this remotely during COVID with a Southeast Asia online job portal company, and they were looking into growing their Indonesia market. There are so many of them put in the fact because we have a lot. The higher you are in the stakeholders level, the strong view they think they know it very well. So we have a lot of them on there. But I start to ask about credibility, sources, and everything like that. And I can start seeing in the corner of my eyes a lot of post-its start to slowly move to strong hypothesis bucket because they didn't have the backups to kind of back what they say. So it's very important to do that. Why this is exercise is important because then it helps us to align like what, how we want to get into the market. What are the things we think we need to know and what are the things we didn't know, need to know? And also, can we combine the information, the questions we have or hypothesis assumptions we have so that we can see how we can get the answers so that it will help you to inform that the decision so that you can launch in the market well enough. So because a lot of time when you think about cultural intelligence or cultural insights, you think about big research have to be done. You know, you have to go out and do grand tour in the countries to talk to your audiences or things like that. It's all good. Like, it's really good if you could afford that or you could do that because it's always good for you to go out and talk to your users, see their context of you, see their context of living and how they use might use your products. And
Jack Ma used to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know if you've been on with them to those kind of trip ethnography research or, you know, visiting. It's amazing. It's you see the world they're in. You feel it. You can connect with them as well. So that's very important for you to kind of understand that. But sure, it's not, it could cost money and it could cost time. So sometimes you don't have to go all in first. This exercise actually helped us to be able to see, actually, we can do some quick survey or we can do pull together all the data or insight or analytics you already have in that market and see what you can use with that informations first so that you can make some quick decisions for you to go together to launch into the new market as well. So, yeah, it's kind of like stepping back and ask different questions rather than go straight to say, this is how you should launch it. This is not how you should not. But it's very important to know what kind of cultural aspect to look into, right? Like there are a lot of cultural dimensions. I don't know, you are definitely aware of like Gert Hofstede about the dimensions you have collectivism versus individualisms, and in that on that scale, they plot the different countries to say where you are on that scale. Those scales are, or dimensions or model are good as a reference. A lot of company comes to me and say, "Oh, I know it already, like this and that," but it's really hard to make it as practical, right? So it's China is a collectivist society. So what does that mean, right? What does that mean to your domain? It means like, maybe university, like students actually don't make their own decisions about which university they go to overseas or in the parents, the auntie and uncles, a lot of views and kind of coming in, your tutors, your teachers, there are a lot of views coming in. So what does that mean? Yeah, you're nodding and as you understand.
Well, they don't get to choose even what they study, right?
Exactly.
Their field.
Yeah. So a lot of decisions weren't made by one person. It's not just in university. It could be in medical as well. So it's very important to know what cultural aspect is relevant to your products and services and how that manifested, right? So when we talk about collectivism, when it's medical, like we talk about, the kids is actually always going to the hospital with the parents. I'm originally from Malaysia, I'm Malaysian Chinese. When I went home, me and my sister actually went for the quarterly checkup with my parents. And I was sitting in the hospital waiting line. I saw everyone have parents have kids with them, at least one kids with them. But they're all capable walking and, you know, they are nothing. And I live in the UK for more than 21 years now, and that never happened because everyone just go to their the hospital or GP or whatever themselves. So what does that mean? So in medical sense or in digital tech sense, medical tech sense, then you will have to think about how collectivism manifested in your industry. If you're hospitality, then you know collectivism is actually manifested in a different way. People travel together as a group, very commonly with parents, right?
Yeah, I mean, if I've got a startup that is working on some sort of hospital check-in platform when you go or something, you're not designing it for the patient. You're designing it for the patient's child, who is probably doing all the running around and checking in and making appointments. And like, I know, as a cultural example, we had, you know, both our children were born in China. I tell people about that experience where we met the doctor at the front of the hospital and we went in together. The doctor didn't necessarily work at the hospital. And then there was a lot of different departments for a lot of different testing, whether it was x-rays, ultrasounds, blood work, other things. And we had to get a card that you would put money on. And so we would fill the card or charge the card up. And then we everywhere that we went, and the doctor shuttled us around, and we had all our paperwork, and then we would go and we'd do the thing, and then we'd pay. We'd swipe the card and pay. And we would go to the next place and do the next thing, and then we would swipe the card and pay. And you'd like paid individually at each little department of the hospital and all these things. I mean, a very, very, very different experience.
Yeah, it's more community.
Yes. And when you were talking about even a company saying, how do we make our marketer, you know, be able to market to these people or something? And it's, you know, I use the old adage that said you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And I'm like, there's just a lot of assumptions. Basically, it's like, how do we make the horse drink? I'm like, well, first of all, how do you know the horse even likes water? What if the horse likes milk or beer or baijiu? What makes you think that it's even a horse? What if it's a cow? What makes you think that the horse is even thirsty, right? And what makes you think that the horse prefers your water over the other water that's right beside that's the exact same? Maybe there's a duplicate product in the market already. There's just a lot of things that are kind of factored into that. So it's, I think you're right. It's like, whoa, let's step back a sec and do some, you know, some groundwork first.
Yeah, and I think the groundwork is very important because that set the foundations. When you have the foundations, you understand a bit more about the market, then everything else will actually start up easier to be able to think about what you need to do next as well. And as well, like thinking about Asia as well, like it's so big, like China itself is a market. And then you have Indonesia, and you have APEC, you have India and so on. Even within that, there are so many differences as well. So, but some of them you share, right? In China and Asia, the whole collectivism culture is so strong. Even so, like actually it share with a lot of Latin America as well. I have to say, and Middle Eastern as well. They still, sometimes they share a lot of cultural aspects in especially on the collectivism and family value in that instance as well. So it's very important to kind of step back and think about what other cultural aspect is important for your products, for your service as well.
I like that. Now, maybe we can get into a little bit more details. Mm-hmm. So, APAC, incredibly diverse and dynamic, culturally, linguistically, economically. You look at their social media platforms of choice, and it could be, you know, Facebook, it could be WeChat, it could be Line, it could be Kakao. People shop on Amazon here, eBay there, you know, obviously Taobao and Tmall and Shopee, Lazada. I mean, it is crazy diverse area of the world. So from your experience, What should companies know before entering APAC markets? What are the common misconceptions or mistakes that you probably have to correct that Western brands make when trying to expand into APAC? And I love the examples that you've given throughout the show already.
I think one of the examples that the first thing I always tell them is don't assume Asia or APAC is one market, right? As we talk about China is one, Japan is one, South Korea is one, and then you have Southeast Asia. every single one is very different. And even within one country, like Malaysia, we have so many ethnicities in that country and ethnic groups, right? So every single one of us, you have India, Malay, and Chinese, especially the three main ethnic group. So every single one has their own culture and language and, you know, value and so on, but they are one market. So I think first of all, it's not to treat APEC as one uniform growth market, right? Instead, it's a complex set of market with different history and digital adoptions and curves and so on. Like you say, the example you gave, the social platforms or e-commerce website, there's so many of them. And sometimes they share within country, like Lazada and Shopee have been used for different, so many different markets, but not in certain APEC markets. Taobao is the same, it's popular in Malaysia as well, even though they're actually shipping from China far away, but it's really famous and popular as well. So that's one thing that I always will go into companies, say, don't make that mistake. And the other thing is trying to avoid applying Western cognitive biases as well in terms of how you kind of see the market or what you want to do with it. So, for example, we're talking about the financial services, right? Is in Vietnam and Thailand, when I work with clients, it's not just about individual, especially for youngsters. We are looking into young generations in terms of how they use money and financial services. In the UK or in the West, it's very independent. We want them to know how to use money. We want them to kind of have the control and learn how to manage that financially. But in Asia, we found that it's actually parents are still controlling. The decision-making is still the parents are doing that as well. And also, I take cosmetic examples like L'Oreal and also actually Sephora. I don't know you knew about that. Sephora have to left South Korea last year, I think last summer. They're trying so hard to get into the market because cosmetic, South Korea, of course, is going to
grow. Yeah. I was going to say.
It's huge. But they did a lot of things wrong. They have their customer service the same way as other countries in the West, where they have the advisor in the shop telling them what to do and everything. But South Korean consumers are very advanced in that instance. They want to shop. They know what they're looking for. And then South Korean culture is very much care about the skincare rather than cosmetic. They care about the glowing skin so that it actually reflects the whole holistic beauty rather than makeups and putting things on and, you know, put things on. But Sephora actually focused very much on cosmetic. But even with cosmetic, they did it wrong as well. The makeups was very vibrant, very bold. But then if you look at K-pop's artists, right, they are very nature, as if like you have no makeup, very nude type of makeup. So even that, they got it wrong. So there are a lot of different ways that they got it wrong because they made a lot of assumptions, not knowing the market. And then they positioned themselves as luxury brand, while actually South Koreans see that, see it that way. And they have a lot of, like they have Olivia Young that is very popular in the market. So you have to compete with that. They have a lot loyalty on that brands already that you can buy any brands of the cosmetic or skincare products on there. So they are actually not doing enough research, I guess, or cultural insights to know the market very well. And eventually they lost so much money, they have to leave. It's kind of like not applying what you think is right, but it's actually going into it and understanding very carefully in terms of what they kind of look into, especially in Asia, because it's so different and so much variations on that. So I was doing a research in Malaysia actually for a medical tech company, right, to understand how people go about medical care and health and fitness and so on, and what kind of doctors they go to and we realize there's so many layers. Not only you have different ethnicities, have different traditional thinking, like in China, Chinese Malaysians, because they fall in Chinese tradition, they have this heat and cold, you know, like this. Either you, if you have fever or your sore throat, your body is heat, is heated, right? So drink more water and so on. Or your body is cold, then you have to eat more ginger and more different type of things to balance your yin and yang of your body. And then you have Malay, they have their own traditional medical way to kind of have their leaves or certain things to kind of calm down certain like fever or cold, like very light sickness or something like that. So with that, you have to think about their trust as well, right? How much they trust the authority in terms of what they are getting and what is not. And also then you think about the sandwich generation. So you have the generations who look after their parents, like we talked about earlier. Their parents' health is their matters, right? And then they have their kids at the bottom they have to look after as well. And then they have their own ones. And they apply different ways for different, they approach medications and medicines assistance differently for every single situation at every single level. So this kind of thing is really complicated to think about. No, it's not just one market, like you go to one country and that is it. But there are a lot of different things you have to think about.
Okay, so let me ask you, and I know we've covered some of this back and forth. Just what you're working with one brand, let's say it's a UK brand, and or a German or French, something European. They're looking to expand to the west of being America, or they're looking east to expand into, let's say China. Let's just use China. How do the strategies differ? Just a couple. I mean, I know there's probably 1,000 things that are different, but let's focus on the most important one or two things as far as the expansion strategy that you would potentially be talking to them about that's different between expanding to the US or expanding to China.
We can talk about the differences, but I think one thing to bring back as well is the thinking and the framework is the same, right? So what I mean by that is when you think about launching in any market, whether to the West or to the East, because Europe is in the middle, and it's very the same thinking, the mindset should be the same, right? You need to understand the market, whether how different they are and how similar they are in different aspects. So that is very important. And then use the same framework, right? Like to understand the market, you need to look into the social, how people behave. And the cultural aspects that I talk about is similar, right? So the cultural aspect that I have actually have a tool that I use for with clients to think about what are the things important. So one of the cultural aspect I call it is authority and hierarchy. So within that, we can actually examine if it is in America, what does that mean? Are they hierarchical or an authority? How do they manifest it in the way people behave within your domain? And using the same thing as well, you can do that in China, right? In China, it's hierarchical. What does that mean? If you are a SaaS company, what does that mean? Especially if you are a work management tool. For example, I worked with Asana before, which is a work management tool. And they were launching in Japan and other countries. It's kind of like that element is very important to them because hierarchical and authority, who make the decisions and how.
Especially within the workplace.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very different from in Asia, in the West. But at the same time, that might be slightly less important, for example, for an e-commerce website or e-commerce brand, or like, for example, for Spotify or so on, because then will be less important in that aspect. It might be making decisions is one of them. So if you want to look into subscriptions, who pay for subscriptions, then sure, there's a hierarchical things happening because the parents might be making a decision. So, but that is lighter in the weight is less than if you do for work management tool in the workspace. And then you have other things. For example, you have social norm or digital infrastructure. What does that mean in Asia? In China, you have tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 cities. which one you are focusing on, right? And tier one, you have very fast network. You have very advanced technology. People are so used to everything to be quick. You deliver it. I book it now, 2 hours, the things delivered to your house. So there are different expectations, but because they have a very different infrastructure set up. But in tier three in the China market and in China, might have slightly different infrastructure set up that you don't get that kind of services or expectations that you might get in the same, even within the same city, you can actually have the look. And then what does that mean in the US, for example? So in that instance, if you use the same framework and same thinking in terms of looking into what is important, then actually it helps you to look into the aspect that could tell you how different it is from people behaving and people behavior and expectation and so on. That, I think that is a higher level of how does one to the other is different. But if we can go into the differences on how people behave, right? Like we talk about collectivism and Western, but it's so huge. Sometimes I don't even know where to start because there's so many different things going on in the market, right? In culture, in how people behave and so on. So I think it's very important to start with the basic in terms of thinking about what are the aspects that is important. I went to Beijing a few years ago for recruitment companies. We went to Beijing to understand how people recruit and what are the things that is very important to kind of look into and what people care about. And you have all these organizations, you have public organizations, you have private organizations. Within private, you have small and big organizations. And we were talking to all these people in terms of what they care about, how they do recruitment, what they care about from the candidates and so on. We learned so much things that actually, even within Beijing, it's so different. It feels like it's its own country sometimes because they have their own regulations. They have own needs. And because people taking exam in a different way, you have different certifications. And if you are not from Beijing, you have a different status in terms of how you get a job or how you get to take the exam in Beijing and so on. So, and that's very important to know in China. It's not just tier one, tier two, tier three countries, but even within cities, they have differences. I remember I was doing a work with Arriva. So they are electrical car that is actually looking into getting into the China market, and they're actually focusing on taxi. So we talked to DD's taxi drivers. We talked to all these different taxi drivers, look at the car, what is important to them. And we kind of learned about Beijing have a different number plate as well. Actually limit the number plates that you can get. So you sometimes have to go into raffles for a few years to kind of get chosen. So all these regulations that actually you wouldn't know unless you actually properly understand that and how that actually going to influence your positioning and your products and how you talk about your products in that countries as well. Do you want to try to blend into it as local as possible, or do you want to actually appear to be an international brand? Because sometimes there's a benefit doing that in the local market because they appreciate what you bring in from if you are a different brand, but how do you make it relevant to them? They still like you. So there are a lot of different things that you actually should look into before you decide how you position your brand and so on.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many nuances. You mentioned about the car, the lottery. I mean, everybody can buy a car. Mm. You can't get a license plate. That's the thing. And, you know, even, you know, I remember back in the day when Obama would be coming out for a visit and they were aggressively trying to kind of clear some of the pollution away so that we called it Obama blue, they were trying to get the blue sky. And so they would limit the number of cars that were allowed within the third ring or fourth ring of Beijing. So one day you got if you had an even number as the last number in your license plate, then you got to drive. And then the next day was an odd number. And just knowing how sometimes these things work can be massively impactful.
It seems small, right? It seems like a small insight, like just a small thing, a small drop in the big oceans, right? This whole number plate, like odd number and even number, you can go in. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you see somebody with a license plate that has three or more eights in a row, stay very far away from that car and do not crash into it.
Far, far, far. It's like they are important person, right?
That's right. You do not want to get into an accident with that person.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.